Hey, Mama, you don't have time to be messing around endlessly scrolling to find a caregiver for your child. Let me clue you in to my trick to save time and my sanity when finding a sitter. SitterCity.com. SitterCity knows what they're doing. They've been helping busy parents find the perfect sitter for over 20 years. While other sites overwhelm you by throwing hundreds of random profiles your way, SitterCity matches you with caregivers who actually fit your needs. No endless scrolling, no guesswork. I love that all caregivers undergo ID verification. They have background checks, specialized qualifications, and real parent reviews to know if they showed up on time or really know how to handle my sassy toddler. And if I need help, I can talk to a real live human, not a robot, with SitterCity's delightful team. You know, my employer pays for me to get SitterCity completely free as part of my benefits. Yours could too. SitterCity is my go-to for a smarter, simpler way to find reliable, trustworthy care. Don't wait. Go to SitterCity.com/XX and get the help you need.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. Today, I am joined by actor, singer, activist, and Broadway superstar, Miguel Cervantes. Many of you know Miguel best for his lead role of Alexander Hamilton, my favorite show, in the Chicago production of Hamilton, which ran from 2016 to January 2020. And then he took on the role of Alexander Hamilton at Richards Rogers Theater in New York, New York. Miguel quickly became one of the more well-known Broadway stars after the rise of Hamilton took the country by storm and still does today. Today, we're going to discuss the life of a Broadway performer, what his perspectives of the Hamilton craze was and is, and how he dedicated a big part of his life to advocacy of something a little closer to home. Miguel, thank you so much for being here. We are so excited to have you.
Jason, thanks for having me, man. This is great to be here. Thanks
so
for the invite.
So great to be here. And everyone back home, they know I am a huge, huge Hamilton guy.
This is what I hear.
This is what we just saw you at US Open. It was about a month ago. We were singing along. And fun fact about Hamilton, I actually work out to the soundtrack. It fires me up.
Listen, I am a fan like everybody else. I know I say it. I've fun fact, if you're ever in a bar or something, everyone asks you, hey, do you by any chance know what human being on the planet has played Hamilton more than any other human being? Now you know. I think it's around 1,800 performances now over the course of 7 years.
Wow.
With a year and a half break there. But I'm still a fan. I hear some of the beats and the grooves and stuff, and I understand why people love it so much, even though it is in my bones now. It's sort of, I don't listen to it at home anymore. I do understand what the desire, what that sort of drive is to be part of it.
That's so cool. And I have a million questions for you, but before I got to ask you off the cuff. After 2,000 performances, do you get kind of sick of the same songs?
I mean, look, there's no world in which it's not a job.
Sure.
I go to work like everybody else, and sometimes I'm in a bad mood and life happens outside of the theater, but what you just said is kind of what drives me to go to those places. I go to the place every single night because I know that there are people that just are obsessed with the show, that it means something to them for whatever reason, whether it's about their own life or their own sort of ideas of social, political, all of these things that the Hamilton embodies and messages that it tries to sort of put out into the world. And I know it's important to people. I know that it is. So I never want anyone to be like, oh, he looked like he was a little sort of phoning it in today, or he looked a little bit, you know, it's still a great show, but I never wanted to feel that way for myself or for anyone in the audience. So, you know, the dun starts out and I go right on. And it's easier for me because I'm on stage for all but about 12 of the minutes of the whole show.
Hustling.
So there's not a whole lot of time for me to be like, oh, I can't believe I had to do this. But there are days like anybody else, but I take the privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a privilege for me to be up there. There's lots of people that are talented in the world and I happen to be the guy that gets to do it right now.
Yeah.
And so I'm honored and humbled by that. And I want to sort of give it the justice that people want. So I know it's kind of a cheesy actory answer,
genuine,
but it's true. That's
it's
how
genuine,
I feel.
It's real.
And I want people to come out of there getting the Hamilton experience that they want.
Absolutely. It's an unbelievable profession. The story has such impact. But I want to talk about maybe some of the lulls before the highs and a tough moment for Broadway. And I can imagine you, but let's go to timeline, right? What I saw was March 3rd, 2020. You take on the role as Alexander Hamilton in New York, New York. It's like the Super Bowl. That's the dream job. You get it.
It was, what, 9 days later? All of Broadway shuts down. September 14th, 2021, Broadway reopens. That's 551 days. 8 days after you were given the lead of Hamilton, Broadway is shut down. How challenging was that for you and even your family?
It feels such like a blur now. I remember that day sitting in the hair chair, getting my microphone put in my hair, and I said, something feels funny. Something feels weird. I'm watching the news, and in the intermission that day, there was an NBA game or something that got canceled. The Utah Jazz were playing.
Yeah, it was right in the middle of the game. And they shut it down.
They pulled it.
Yeah,
they
and Mark Cuban was there.
Yeah, I was like, what just happened?
Yeah.
And we had to go to the second act, and then right after Quiet Uptown, Aaron Burr, Daniel, who was playing Aaron Burr at the time, walked out, and I came off, and, you know, we're crying, and we're Quiet Uptown, you know, coming off stage, and everyone's are looking at this phone. And they said, look, Tom Hanks just got it. And he was off shooting that movie or whatever he was doing in Australia. I thought, wait, Tom Hanks, we're done. We're all done. We're all done. We're going down. And sure enough, that was the Wednesday night, and Thursday they shut it down. And then there was this just weird feeling of, how long is this going to be? How long are we going to be here? How long are we going to sort of sit in this place? And then it sort of really started sinking in for all of us in the show that this was going to be a long, drawn out thing. And then you pivot from, oh, what are we going to do, to what, how do we sustain ourselves? How do I sit in here with my family, and what are we going to do? And then the heaviness of it really sinks in about people are dying. And this is not just about our money and my job and our life. And thank goodness, like, my family, we were set up really well, and we didn't have much to worry about as far as that goes, but the weight, and there's people in my show who were going to be struggling, who had just gotten the job, they just moved into the show in that year, you know, just a few weeks before I got there, and now they don't have any money. And Hamilton they took care of us. They took such good care of us.
That's amazing.
So much props to the producers and Lynn and everybody for really looking out for everyone as best they could. But it was still difficult for lots and lots of people, and that's hard to understand. It's hard to really grasp, and then to look at, clearly, we're going to open in the spring, right?
Of course.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah, month or two.
Summer comes. Clearly, we're going to open in the summer. Oh, maybe it'll be in the fall. Okay, here comes 2021. It's going to be, and then it just kept pushing and pushing and pushing until September. And then it's sort of like the Zoom world happened.
Zoom
concerts. And I sat in my office with my guitar, and I'm saying, I am not throwing away my shot, like, with my dog over there in the corner and all these people on Zoom. We sort of got used to this weird, not personal. I'm looking into people's houses on the screen, but I'm over here in my office, and that became a whole nother world of performing and connection.
Yeah.
As an actor and as someone on stage, just every day, just connecting and feeling the energy of another person and the audience. It's part of my job. It's part of why I love what I do.
Yeah.
And to not have that was just so crushed my heart every time. And so those were all of the things that I think a lot of performers were feeling.
Yeah.
That we just couldn't share that space with people anymore. And then my own family, every family, every person had their own story.
Sure.
What it was to be in the house and dealing with all of those emotions that go with that. And we had ours as well. So, you know, when you could feel, they made the announcement, you could feel it coming back. I couldn't even imagine what it was going to be like.
And
man, let me tell you what, when we got back, the applause, it was just like this electric energy that I will never, ever, ever forget.
Bone chilling comeback. It is, and it's so cool that is what happened. And we went back in full force and that you felt that. I'm glad that Hamilton took care of all you guys in general. That's so good to hear. In general, for people that are just seeing Broadway as an industry from a distance, would you say that is the same for the whole industry, or did a lot of people just go without income for a while?
I think producers, the commercial nature of Broadway is just that. It's a commercial venture.
Yeah.
You know, artists and art and the beautiful theater part of it, be damned, it's still a business.
Yep.
And they still need to make the numbers and all of these things. So Hamilton clearly does very, very well as a business.
Yep.
Other shows maybe weren't quite making the numbers they wanted, or all of these other things. Any other reason why any business could be sort of flush or not. And so any show that doesn't have lots of money in the coffers is going to just say, we're super sorry. There are avenues like the Actors Fund and stuff like that, where these where actors could go and say, hey, can we help get help with this, that, or the other thing, healthcare, health insurance. Like we work on a, the more you work, the more you get covered, like you're a covered. Union.
Got it. Okay.
So do you, okay. X number of weeks equals X number of months of healthcare.
Got it. Okay.
Hamilton said, we're going to give you that. We're going to pay that for you.
Awesome.
Other companies say, we're sorry. We can't afford that. And that's just the nature of any business. Right. Yeah. And so I watched actors struggle, and I watched other peers of ours in the industry not know what was going to happen and sort of whether their show was going to reopen. Yeah. Some shows just closed up.
They
just closed up shop before we got back.
Overhead of it.
And because it was, I'm not sure what the business of the rent and the electric bill and all of these things that are part of the cost of doing business of a Broadway show, but it's not cheap.
It's not cheap.
And so I think that I watched a lot of people
suffer through that period.
They were insecure, and then they came back to nothing.
Mm-hmm. It's one of these industries I don't think we think about enough, especially during that time, because there's only 200 seats. There's only 300. There's only so many people that can be fit in there. And it's not like a baseball game where you could socially distance. Like, I know how hard that time
was. Not only that, but we're going to be the first ones to shut down and the last ones to
open. Yeah. I mean, detrimental to the industry. Stay tuned to the recap, guys. I'm going to talk a little bit more about what Miguel already alluded to. Some of the ROIs on shows, some that have done really well and some that haven't done so well. We're going to get into that. But for now, I got to ask you this. So many people listen to this podcast and they are so lost professionally. They don't know where to go. They don't know where to turn. Then I'm looking all about you, Miguel, and I see that you go to a high school, Booker T. Washington High School for Performing and Visual Arts. And I'm like, could you imagine at 14 knowing like exactly the direction you want to go? Was that the case when you went to a specialized school for this?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Absolutely didn't expect not. That.
I consider myself I consider any performer who is successful, whatever, in whatever industry, the exact meeting of opportunity and talent and luck. So I happen to have talent. And I didn't know where I was. I didn't know where I was going to end up. I wasn't a kid jumping up on the table, singing the songs like I'm going to be on Broadway. That wasn't me. That wasn't who I was. I was going to be a teacher. As my mom was a teacher, so I'm just going to be a teacher. I was the kid who like, hey, anybody wants to sing something, I raise my hand. I would jump in, and who wants to read the thing in front of the class? That's what I did. But for the most part, I didn't know where this path was going to lead. And then I met a person who said, "Hey, my friend Aaron. She said you can dance a little bit. Why don't you come to the art school?" As a dancer, I said, what is that?
Yeah.
And I went and met this person and that person, and then transferred from dance. I'm not that great a dancer, but I did okay. And then I moved from there to the singing and acting. And then I got a college scholarship at Emerson College. Emerson, and sort of that's what pushed me in that direction. But all of a sudden, as a 13, 14 year old kid, I'm surrounded by all of these artists. Mm-hmm. And I formed an idea of what I could do. Like, what is this life? How does my desire to sing and dance and jump in front of people maybe help me or move me in a direction that I had no real idea. And then so you put in a little bit of work, put in a little thought, and then end up at college with a musical theater degree at Emerson saying, okay, I can, this seems like a path worth forming, and worth exploring. And, you know, failures and successes all coming in that mix led me to New York. And I came into New York and was a total failure.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
When you said you were a failure, was it in auditions? What did that look like?
I walked into New York City out of school thinking that I had it all figured out.
Yep.
I came out of college. I was the guy. I was like the sweetheart kid. Got to do all of the shows and got a lot of attention. And I thought that was all I needed.
Mm-hmm.
Walked into New York and happened to have a friend who was an agent. And she said, hey, you want to be? And I said, yeah. Let's do that. That's how this works, right? You just get an agent out of school.
Snap your fingers.
Ask any kid coming out of college if that's how it works, and it's not. That's not what they're going to tell you. But I was sort of, this thing fell to me. And so I walked into New York thinking I had it all figured out and auditioned and auditioned and auditioned and just crash and burn. Only put in just enough work to get into the room or into the place, and then would come out of the room saying, oh, I don't know if I did, I maybe could have tried harder. I maybe could have prepared more, but thought that maybe this raw talent, which had gotten me some, and if I could go back and talk to that kid, if I could go back and talk to him, I had so many opportunities that I just didn't take because I thought I would just be able to wing it or ride along. And so that was where, and that was, and also around, it was around, I don't know, September 11th, 2001, when I was doing all of this. And so then the industry kind of had this, the whole city,
the world
had this whole pause. And that was a time that I sort of refocused.
How do you, so I think a lot of people can relate to that. They want to pursue something, it's not working out. Whatever industry or job, that's it. But you still have to pay your bills. You still have to take care of yourself while you're trying to go for these auditions. And you don't get paid to do auditions.
No,
what are you doing at this time to make money, but not lose focus of what you want?
Well, again, I wish I could say that that's not what happened. I was waiting tables here in New York City and making money. And I just thought, and so then my focus shifted to making money and surviving and away from making sure that what am I doing here? What's the point of all this?
Yeah.
Why am I serving this chicken parmesan to these people? Right. It's not to make sure I get the tip here. It's so that I can pay my rent, so that I can go to a dance class, go to a vocal, prepare, do the things, but I wasn't. And I just thought, and so that there was the survival job became the focus. And I think that was another problem, is I wasn't splitting my focus enough to sort of make sure that the advice that I give kids now, young people, is that you have to continue to learn and get better. There is somebody out there that's better than you.
100%.
There is always somebody.
Always.
And it's working harder than you. So you've got to put in the work too. And I didn't. And so, and then September 11th and New York kind of, and I ended up back in Dallas.
Okay.
With my family.
Interesting.
And there, and then I thought of 6 months and I was like, what am I doing here?
That is the point though, that you would think, I would assume, my career in Broadway and it's done. I'm going back home. What is that the case?
I started to think about what my life looked like there, how to form what could possibly be a future here in the theater community. It was still a theatrical idea in the theater community here. And maybe I don't know. It was sort of forming in my brain. And then I had another sort of life altering moment. It was a girl in Boston who I knew in college, and she was like, "Hey, what are you doing there? What are you doing?"
Yeah.
And maybe people don't get that. Maybe a lot of people don't get that sort of, or maybe they do
wake
and don't recognize
type
it.
Thing.
You know what I mean? I think it was, and it had nothing to do with, she just said, "What are you doing?
Yeah.
Get out of there." And I said, "Great." And I went in there and we got together for like a week, and it was a terrible crash and burn relationship, but
she motivated me.
But I got out of, and I ended up back in Boston as a 20, I don't know, whatever, 25, 26 year old guy. And I refocused and I said, okay, those days are, I can't do that anymore. How do I get from here? Now this guy, 26 year old, said, "I want that."
Okay.
"I want that. And how do I get it?"
And what was the breaking point? What was the difference that made you land that first opportunity?
I got an audition for Bat Boy the Musical.
Okay.
Which is the Bat Boy, like the Bat Boy from the Cave, from the Inquirer thing back in the early 2000s. And I got this audition and I dove into this audition more than any audition I'd ever done. I found the bootleg of the show. I watched the bootleg. Don't come get me for that. And I looked at the script. I memorized every line backwards and forwards. And I said, I am not going to go in that room and come out thinking I could have done something more.
Love that.
And that's how I wanted to approach any other audition from now to, and I got the part. And I met the guy and I met the writer and he met the guy, and this guy hits, "Hey, you should come help me with this show." And then I did Spelling Bee on the national tour, and I met James Lapine and Bill Finn, and just these sort of balls started falling into the right place. I did the first national tour of Spelling Bee and ended up doing my Broadway debut in that show in 2000, whatever year that was, 2009. My Broadway debut was a 1 week stint in a show that had been running for 2 years. So they were all, for me, it was my Broadway debut. For everyone else, it was Tuesday.
Got it. Another day.
But it was still like, this was it.
You did it. You went from being shut down in Dallas to now you're on a stage in Broadway.
And I achieved something that so many people never do.
Right.
And it took me, and some people do it when they're 21 right out of school. It took me 7 or 8 years before I finally saw what needed to be done.
On your debut, how old are you?
I'm 27.
27. You went through a ton of failures, New York, kicked out of New York, back to Boston. Now you're on the stage. In a role like that, I think Broadway performers, in my opinion, have one of the toughest professions in the arts. You have to dance, you have to sing, you have to be live. There is no rerun it, cut. And you have to entertain and engage that entire community.
And not only that, but to get there, you have about 45 seconds in front of a table of people. You walk into a room and you say, "Hi, everybody, my name is Miguel. I hope you like this small sample of what I can do."
Wow.
And that's it.
And that's it.
That's it.
All right, we're going to get back to making first impressions and how you do that. Before we do, your first debut, what is someone on Broadway, it's not in like a lead role, that's just at like performing cast, what do you make? Like what is the earning potential?
So the minimum, any Broadway minimum when I started was around $1,700 a week.
Okay.
And so, and that's the salary works on a weekly basis.
Got it.
So, and then anything can be negotiated above that for any number of things.
Okay.
Up, all the way up to Hugh Jackman, who probably makes $100,000 a week.
Got it.
You know what I mean? And so that's sort of that.
So maybe, it's not this
or
like
even more.
Set
I don't know.
Lab.
Hugh, I don't know if you're out there. I don't know what you make.
Hugh, you probably make more. But it's not this like set level. You're in this role. This is how much you're paid by the union. And it's is it a week to week basis or is it like these NFL, NHL like contracts or whatever, where they sign you for like 3 years?
There are different sort of standards for like ensemble folks.
Yeah.
Normally they call it colored contract. I can't remember what it's called. There's a pink contract and a white contract.
Yeah.
One is for the ensemble who are sort of at will. They can stay for as long as they want. There's no term limit.
Okay.
As far as how the producers can say there's always exit strategies for, but they are not on any sort of 1 or 2, 3 year term. Principals will be on a 1 year.
Okay.
Year by year. So for the most part, you sign a year, gets close to the end of the year, they'll say, "Would you like to stay? We'd like you to stay." The managers get involved, the agents get involved and start negotiating for whatever things you can get. And then you re-sign and then you're in for another year. So
okay.
I just recently re-signed until next September. So I'll be Hamilton
at least until next September.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Amazing. And then a question for you. You started like 27, 28. That's when you land the first gig. Since then, have you had any kind of like setbacks where you were in that position where you're like searching for that next thing or has it been all?
Have you ever met a Broadway actor? I got the first job. And if you've met a Broadway actor, then you'll know that the answer is absolutely.
Well, gotta set it up.
There are some people I think, and I've known some who have gone from, you know, and I'm like, do they know everyone because they're in this ensemble and they go to that show and then and I just watch these small group of people that would just go into the next show or into the rehearsals. For me, I got Spelling Bee and it was an amazing time. That show came to an end and then I had to find something to do. And so I hustled and I got up at 7 a.m. and worked events where I put up the tents and the cable for all of these the Victoria's Secret annual show. I'd lay all the electrical cable for that. But the auditions would come and I'm like, "Nope, I can't come today. I got to do this." And I was actually doing that job, making whatever I'm making, just trying to make, and then that's when American Idiot came along.
Yeah.
And that,
interesting.
I got this job. It was called the Untitled Punk Rock Musical. And I gave every bit of myself that I could, knowing that I couldn't focus on the other thing that was making a lot of money, but I couldn't focus on that. And I have to get, and I got it. And that was this, Billy Joe Armstrong was there.
Yeah.
Green Day was there. And that was the Broadway opening. Like I said, the first one, it was a week and no one was as excited as me.
Yeah.
But this one, we did the opening night. We did the Grammys. And that was it.
Unbelievable.
It was unbelievable. It lasted for one whole year. They closed. And then
back to unemployment.
Back to the thing.
Back to the grind.
You go out there
else.
And see, okay, what's coming up next? What's that? And then there was more cable laying and more events,
more
chicken parms to be sold. And that is the story of most Broadway people. Always think about my business.
Yeah.
Oh, you got it. You made it.
Yeah.
And I thought that too. When I'm a kid, I'm like, wait, you're on Broadway.
Yeah. Wow. Unbelievable.
You must be. And I even had a roommate who was in Wicked when I was still in the hustle.
Yeah.
And she would go to Wicked every night. I'm like, wow, you really made it.
Yeah.
No, but I didn't realize she's living in a 3-bedroom apartment with 3 strangers. You know what I mean? And I didn't really make the connection that no, it's still just a job that, and we all live in New York City, and there's it's an expensive city. And so I think that's the hope, or the what people need to know is that it is the best job in the world.
Yeah.
It is one of the most amazing jobs to do, but it still has to be, it's not automatic.
Yeah.
It's not automatic.
By no means is it automatic.
And I finished American Idiot and I was unemployed looking for, hoping someone would see me and like me. And then I got, like you said, If Then came along because I did another show with Michael Greif, who was the director. And we did that workshop for 3 years,
mm-hmm.
3 years of workshops in studios and in front of this producer, that producer. And it finally got picked up by the public, and that we did that show and it was an amazing off-Broadway production. It didn't go to Broadway.
Yep.
So then it was done.
It's back to the chalkboard.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Are you ever scratching your head at any point and saying, I have the talent and skill set that a lot of these people on television and these big TV sets and these big movies and film productions and these big commercials, I can go do that? Do you ever think like maybe that route would be easier?
Absolutely. I try. In fact, I put an audition on tape yesterday for Blacklist. You know what I mean?
Way.
Absolutely.
I'm in,
but it's, people say this all the time. Well, why don't you go do that?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that's a great idea. let me give old Mr. TV a call. Hey, Mr. TV Land, the people see me and it's something that I would love to do. And it's not a either or thing.
Gotcha.
And I want people to know that also, it's also part of the grind. I am Alexander Hamilton on Broadway.
Yep.
And it's one of the top jobs.
It's the coolest job.
Coolest job ever. But that does not mean that CBS and Fox and HBO are saying, hey, Mr. Al Hamilton, Mr. Miguel, we've got all these projects for you.
Yeah.
No, I'm still just another actor trying to get another role. And hopefully there will be one that fits this.
Yep.
By some new writer or some whatever that I would work. I feel what it does offer me is the confidence to walk in there and say, this is what I got. This is who I am. I am confident because I get to do this every night. And that helps me to get further on, but it is something I would love to. I've not done a ton of it.
Yeah.
EMT number two.
Sure.
In a couple of movies. Beat Cop number one. You'll catch me as
okay, you know it's what coming. I mean?
But
it's coming.
But those are that's the actor's life also. It still is the grind and the hustle. And
so is it fair to say that the lead, Alexander Hamilton, of the biggest show on the planet right now, you'll have that job till September. Even as established you are in your career, you're still thinking in October, not sure what could happen?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe. I think now there's a different mentality that I have now.
Okay.
I'm 45 years old. I have children. I have a wife. My idea of what is next starts to get a little bit less about what's the next job, what's the next opportunity, and now how do I sort of prepare myself for the rest of my life? Broadway's hard, dude.
Oh, my Broadway, God.
I don't,
put in perspective for people that don't know.
Huh? I don't see my children go to bed. I don't spend Saturdays with them. I can squeeze in a baseball game here and there. I am actually Coach Miguel right now.
Coach Miguel.
Coach Miguel is on duty for Saturday mornings and stuff, but there are things that I miss. You don't go to weddings. You don't go to, like Tom Brady was just talking about this, about my life is this during these times. And you put you everything else, Christmas. I'm like, well, Christmas, what is that? I get one day. One day for Christmas, one day for Thanksgiving. Oh. It's that's the job that I've chosen. And while, yes, do I enjoy, like, I don't know, you go to your job, write an email, send a report, maybe everybody stands up and claps for you. I don't know.
Yeah.
But they do. At my job, they do. At the end of my job, they stand up. And so there's something magical about that. But at the end of the day, I still want to be with my family. So you balance these two things out and say, I mean, I've been on Broadway four different times, four different shows. Alexander Hamilton for now all of these performances. And as long as they'll have me, and listen, if I have my way, they're gonna have to drag my old ass out of there. And be like, Miguel, it's probably time. You're 65 years old. But you know, maybe there's something that whatever the next thing is. I don't know.
Yeah, I saw the post that you put out there. It was someone's wedding, and it was just you in the camera, and you're like, I know we can't make it, give a shout out, and then you got everyone back on stage giving a shout out for the wedding. So you obviously couldn't make it. But tell people so they have perspective, what does a Monday to Sunday look like in the shoes of Alexander Hamilton?
Monday is dark, so Monday we have, you know,
that's your day off.
Day off. Everyone's day off is Monday. And then Tuesday, we usually don't have anything during the day until Showtime, which is tonight. So today's a Tuesday. In case it's not a Tuesday when you listen to this.
Monday.
Then we'll get to the theater an hour or so before the show, do the show. Wednesday, there's two shows. So you're in there at noon, you're out of there at midnight. Thursday, usually some kind of rehearsal, not always called, but there's always some kind of rehearsal for understudies and swings. So get Showtime Thursday night, another Showtime Friday night. Normally the daytimes are empty, plenty of time for golf. People don't understand. They say, well, do you spend all day long rehearsing? I'm like, no. I've done it enough. I don't have to rehearse. So I do work on my golf game on Fridays and Thursdays. Or we could talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
The theater life is a daytime. Daytime's free mostly. And so sometimes we'll be in there rehearsing new people, rehearsing new stuff. Hey, you're out of your light right there. Those kinds of rehearsals.
Okay.
And then Saturday, two shows. And then Sunday, one more show. And then Monday off is the usual Broadway life.
That is a great. Do you get vacation time?
Yeah, you can take. Okay. You can usually 1 or 2 weeks sometime during the year.
Okay.
Sick days are there available to use as you need them.
Okay.
But we are expected to be there for every show that we can, and they are our Hamilton has been very good about. Hey, my brother-in-law is getting married. Hey, can those kinds of things we can go do.
Go do your thing.
But it is. I just was actually looking today at the Christmas schedule.
Yep.
To say, okay, we have like 16 shows in a row. Because of the way that days off for Christmas work.
Yep.
So 16, there's no day off for 16 shows. No, every day. And some of them
are. What if your voice goes? Especially the way you sing.
Yeah,
you belt them.
That's part of my job as well.
Okay.
To make sure that I'm doing what I need to do to
stay healthy
and keep your voice. Able to use my voice. Now listen, there's three other guys who are Hamilton in the building.
Okay.
So they can go on,
when
I'm not there.
Oh, a few more Hamilton questions and then we're going to get to the golf side hustle. So 16 Tony Award nominations, 11 Tony Awards, $1.9 million in ticket sales. The week it debuted in 2016, $172 average cost of a ticket. The show has turned into just an unbelievable success. Lin-Manuel Miranda, when you took the role, did he offer you any type of advice, or do you have a relationship with him in any capacity?
Yeah, I mean, but in terms of, I was the very first Hamilton cast after him. So the show was still on Broadway. Javier was going to move up into the role, and I was the first Hamilton cast outside of the New York production. His advice to me was very much kind of like more of a cheerleader than advice. He used to say, like, once you get through my shot, then it's all gravy from there. And I'm like, what are you talking about? There's so much more to do after that. But it was, you know, I think he was talking about like the energy of it, the energy of getting through my shot. And then you can sort of ride that energy for the rest of the show.
Yeah.
And he would say to me, dude, I love the way you do that.
Hmm.
That's all I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Because we were never asked to do it. I was never asked to do it like him. Even he said, no, that's my version. That's Javi's version, your version, and every Hamilton you ever see.
It's different.
I think you're going to see it soon.
Yeah.
And you're going to see a whole nother Hamilton than when you saw me do it. Right. So, and that's part of the brilliance of the show is that we all get to bring our own sort of style and flair to it. And the story holds and the emotion holds. And his involvement was much more supportive.
Okay.
And not so much, hey, you're singing it like that. I'd rather you do it like
this. Rather,
maybe he said some of that behind the scenes through.
Yeah.
But for the most part, he was a cheerleader and supportive and there for us to be fan of us and all of us on the stage, everyone.
So cool.
Which was great because people ask me a lot, how did you deal with the pressure of taking over?
Big job.
I didn't know what to do. I listened to the thing and I was like, I can't do that. You can't separate the brilliance and genius of the man who created all the words, the words. I was like, I don't have that. And they said, don't do it. You do what you do.
You make it you.
And then the show will flow like that. And
okay.
So it was really great.
You touched on something there that's a huge role to fill. Every night, you guys usually have some big celebrities in the audience, and then you're auditioning. What type of tips do you have for someone that has to perform, no matter what it is? Maybe it's a sales pitch they're giving in a conference room. Tips of performing under extreme high pressure. How do you do it?
What I, again, wish I could tell my younger self about these situations is nervousness and sort of anxiety all come, it's going to come no matter what.
Yeah.
But the solution, the potion is preparedness, right? If you know everything you can possibly know and have prepared yourself. I used to go into auditions and have only sung the song once.
Wow.
You know, it took me 2 years.
That's wild.
2 years doing Hamilton to where I feel I know, even if I mess up a word or I go blah, 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 I can find my way because it's in my bones now.
Okay.
2 years before I could feel like that. And I expected to go on the, and so preparation is the only antidote to anxiety and fear. And you have to know everything and be prepared more than you think you need to be so that you can be the best version of yourself. Cause that's all you get. You get that one shot.
45 seconds
to give them the best version, and you're going to be nervous.
Yeah.
You're going to be, there's no world in which I'm not nervous anymore,
but guess what?
It's been 7 years and I have sort of figured out what the best version of my Hamilton is now. But I sang the national anthem at Yankee Stadium today. Guess what? I was terrified, terribly nervous. I don't sing the national anthem every day. You know what I mean? And I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen? What if I forget the words? Oh, it was terrifying.
Sure. Yeah,
but I sang it 10 times the day before to make sure that I knew how my body, what it would feel like in my bones.
I love, and the other thing too is what you said about the audition when you nailed it, the big takeaway, I'll take away, and you guys should back home, is when you walk out that door, when you finish that job, you can walk out knowing that you did everything possible to prepare. End of story. And I think that relieves a lot of anxiety.
If you walk out of that room thinking, if I don't get this job, it's not because of me.
Yep.
It's because of what they need, what they see, and how they feel. You know what I mean? It's not because I didn't give the best version of, because I walked out of the Hamilton audition. Let me tell you what, I'd never prepared for an audition like that. Maybe Bat Boy when I was younger, but I did and everything I could possibly have done. And I walked out of that room thinking, they're going to give me that role if I'm the right guy.
Yep. It's amazing.
You know what I mean?
I love it. Last Hamilton question. Curious from a compensation standpoint. If you have a show that's performing the way this show is performing, the average cost of ticket sales are up. There's huge lines. You're selling out everything. You win a Tony. Is there bonus compensation built into contract?
Not for the likes of me and the folks that are in the show now.
Okay.
At the beginning, there's a thing called a workshop agreement where if you're in the workshop of a show that it's in its infancy, they're still working on it. Hamilton, he wrote it for 7 years. And so there were a lot of the people that were in the room with him working as the characters for those 7 years. And there are agreements where I think it's a 20-year term where as part of the workshop agreement, there's a percentage point that is split up again amongst the people who are part of that agreement.
Okay.
And that is only for the original. I think the Hamilton originals ended up with a workshop agreement. Some people like Book of Mormon, Wicked, some of them, I don't know, it's probably past 20 years now or whatever, there is those sort of compensation that can go to the original people who helped create, even some people who didn't make it to the final production.
Got it.
Are part of that. So that's a cool way that collaborators and writers and producers can work with the original company. Folks like me who come in after the fact, they're like, this is what you get. We could make $1 million or $5 million. You still just get that. Go get them. And it's fine with me. They take very good care of us. So
you're here till September. Hey. Go knock it out.
Go
knock it out of the park. All right. Well, we got Christmas coming around the corner. And I know on a side hustle, you talked about golf already. You have the shoe caddy. So if someone out there is looking for a present, a total detour from Broadway, tell them a little bit about what the shoe caddy is and where they could find it for their dad, brother, sister, the golfer in the family.
I was Chicago's golf guest. So everybody in Chicago saw the show. I talked about golf and they were like, hey, come play with me. And I played and I learned how to play and I became addicted to the game. But my wife threatened to divorce me a few times because I keep losing my stuff, keys, wallet, all of these things. And so golf, all the little gadgets and doodads, the tees and stuff. So I created this little gadget. I drew it on a napkin, actually took it over to the Hamilton wardrobe people.
Okay.
But there's a picture of me in like my costume and we're sort of designing it in the costume department over in Chicago.
Yeah.
And it's a little clip and you slide it onto your shoelaces or your pocket and it holds a tee, ball marker, divot tool, and it's all down there on your shoe.
Makes so
where
much
you use
sense.
It anyway. Okay. You know, and someone say, "Oh, well, I don't want to bend down." I'm like, "Dude, you're already bending down. You're already down there. Don't keep anything else in your pockets. Don't lose all your stuff." It's been a cool, like, side labor of love. Sure. You know, the creation of it. It went from an idea in my brain to. And listen, I love Hamilton. I love doing the show, but I didn't make it. And maybe you even heard it in the tone of my voice, but. Hamilton has changed my life forever. But all of a sudden, I'm like, shoot, Caddy. All right, listen, yeah. It's this thing that I made.
The position changed.
And I want to, because I something that was in my brain.
It's yours.
That created, and it's out there in the world. So check it out. Shoot Caddy, shucaddy.com. It's a great stocking stuffer for a golfer. Like regular, listen, if you're like a 4 or 5 handicap and you have your system and the thing, maybe not.
Yeah.
We're not going to worry about you so much. But all of us weekend warriors who still have a dream of going pro in between Bud Lights or whatever, in between cracking a beer on the course. I think it's a cool thing, and I just love watching people like it and enjoying it and stuff like that.
How much do they go for?
$19.99 online.
All right. We're going to give away 3 of those. Put in the comments of the podcast. Give us 5 stars and put in your favorite Hamilton song. Put your Instagram handle, and we're going to give 3 of those away. Before we wrap up and get your trading secret, I need you to have the opportunity to quickly talk about your daughter. So in 2019, your daughter passed away from severe epilepsy. And I know you and your wife do amazing work with Citizens United in research for epilepsy. So if you could briefly just talk about the advocacy of what you guys are doing, and if someone could donate to this cause, where they can go and the impact you guys are making.
Yeah. So in 2015, my daughter was born. Very soon after she was born, we realized that something was not right. Seizures began, epilepsy, the word epilepsy came into our life.
Yeah.
It was a crazy time in our lives because in May of 2016, I was also auditioning for Hamilton. Same month. In fact, my big audition for Hamilton was the day she was getting all of these battery of tests, and I left her at the hospital with my wife to go in front of Lynn and all of these people. And it was this crazy time in my life. In fact, I came out of the room and there's a friend of mine who was just there for something else. And I looked at him and I gave him a hug and I started crying. And some guy said, "Hey man, I'm sure you did great."
Oh,
I said,
"I don't know.
Thanks, buddy, but I don't love Hamilton that much."
I appreciate it, yeah.
And that began our journey. Hamilton and Adelaide and epilepsy lived. We grew together in Chicago in our knowledge of her condition, in our pain, in our suffering.
Yeah.
And we found cure in Chicago that deals with finding better treatments, better cures. I mean, listen, epilepsy, it's a beast.
Yeah.
It's seizure disorders are so much more common than you can ever imagine. 1 in 26 people suffer from some sort of seizure disorder, and that's a ton. And they need more funding, more help for finding better cure, better treatments, because the treatments suck and the meds are bad. So that's what they do. And her condition, we could never get it under control. We could never figure out what was wrong. We never found a solution for her. And it just got worse and worse and worse. And she passed away in October of 2019. Hamilton closed in January of 2020. So the bookends of Hamilton for my life are very significant. And my wife and I dedicated the Hamilton platform, dedicated our lives to be able to use the Hamilton brand and the Hamilton. And they supported me every step of the way to be able to stand up on the back of my role and shout about this condition and what they do. CURE is the name of the organization, Citizens United for Research in Epilepsy. CureEpilepsy.org is their website. We've done a campaign called My Shot at Epilepsy for the last few years. Yeah. We do galas for them. I perform. I wrote a song for my daughter also, all in the hopes. You know, Hamilton's a lot about legacy, right?
Right.
It's a lot about leaving the world different.
Yeah.
And my wife and I, Kelly, also KellyCervantes.com is her website. She wrote a blog. If you're ever interested, if you ever suffered a loss or something, she wrote a blog about Adelaide's last couple years and the difficulty in caring for a special needs or disabled a family member. It's a terrible group to be part of, but we have embraced it and embraced that community. We hope that as time goes by and as the work we continue to do makes a difference, that we can leave a legacy in her name, in Adelaide's name, to maybe one day some young family with a young child won't have to go through what we did. So check it out. Check out her story. My wife is a superhero. Families and the caregivers are superheroes. Yeah. And I was the one in our family who got to go out and do this amazing job. And I wish my wife could could be have gotten the applause because she deserved it. And we do all of this for Adelaide and for my daughter.
That's so great that you guys do that. Guys, in the show notes, we will put the website to Cure, to your wife's blog and website. You can go find it there. Check out Cure. I think it's amazing. And as you're telling me this, I'm just going back to the line from Hamilton. When you talk about legacy, it's you're planting seeds you'll never see.
Yeah.
That's what you guys are planting seeds that you'll never see and making impact on families that you might not and never know, but you know it's being done.
I mean, listen, we're given this platform, and I feel like if I can't do something to help change the world,
right,
then it's not worth it.
Yep.
And so that's what we're doing.
And there's so many ties to that story in the show that you're performing in and the legacy that the Hamiltons, both Alexander and his wife, left. We're going to wrap with your trading secret. Thank you so much for sharing that and telling us your whole story. I mean, your career journey, there are so many takeaways for people at home that they could apply to their life, even though Broadway isn't their answer. But a trading secret. From Miguel, you can't get it in a textbook, you can't get it in a classroom, you can only get it from you on either life navigation, money management, or career advancement. What can you leave us with?
What I have to say is this: opportunity is on its own schedule. Just because you're ready doesn't mean that the opportunity is there. I think all you can do, the only thing you're in charge of, is the product that you have to offer. And then when opportunity and your preparation meet, whenever that is, that's your shot. And do not throw away your shot.
I'm ready to go.
You did it. You
I'm
got
fired
it.
Up.
Listen, we're about to do a line, but see, that's my advice. And I tell young people this. Some people make it when they're 21. Some people make it when they're 40. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not on you. That opportunity is coming. It's on its own timeline. And you meet it whenever you get there.
Freaking, that is one of my favorite trading secrets. I don't say that often because we, especially our generation, millennials and Gen Z, we gotta get it. And then we don't get it and we just crash and burn. Most people move back to Dallas and go take the teaching job and never go where they should. And look at you writing the story that you should have written as opposed to someone else writing it for you. It is awesome. Miguel, thank you so much for your time. And this has been an unbelievable episode. Where can people find you and get all, maybe like reach out to you, follow you on Instagram? Where are your websites?
I am Mig.Cervantes. Mig.Cervantes is my Instagram. I'm working on TikTok. I'm trying to get a little more TikTok-y.
We might have to do a quick TikTok.
I want to do a little TikTok. We can do a little TikTok.
We'll do a little 20-second TikTok.
Absolutely.
We'll get that going
absolutely.
Viral. We just had one go viral.
Okay. Let's make a viral one. I'm ready.
All right. Good stuff. Miguel, thank you so much for coming on. Go follow Miguel. Guys, go check out the show notes. We will have everything in there. Shoe Caddy, everything for Cure. The stuff's incredible. This was another episode of Trading Secrets. One, hopefully you couldn't afford to miss. Ding, ding, ding. Closing the bell to the Miguel Cervantes episode. Man, David, I really enjoyed my time with Miguel, as you know, as a fan from the show. And then additionally, we've been talking ever since this. As you know, Caitlin and I were just in Vegas. We saw Hamilton. The show was incredible. Miguel actually hooked us up to meet the cast, which is amazing. The guy is just an absolute legend. And I don't think I've shared this with you, David, but this is how you know, my dream came true. I asked Miguel to do this with me. It's on my social media if you want to see it. You guys got to hear it. This is Miguel and I going after it.
Got around, they said, this kid is insane, man. Took a book collection just to send him to the mainland. Get your education, don't forget from where you came, and the world's gonna know your name. What's your name, man?
Alexander Hamilton. My name is Alexander Hamilton. And there's a million things you haven't done, but just you wait.
Woo! We got Hamilton, baby.
How great is that?
Well, I don't know how great it was because, to be honest, I couldn't hear a lick of it. So I'm just going to have to go over to your Instagram page and take a look at it.
I love that. Why couldn't you hear a lick of it?
I couldn't hear. I know he had the mic up to the speaker. The idea was there. Maybe it's going to come through, but if it's not, we're going to have to edit that down. But Go to your trading the Trading Secrets or your Instagram page to watch that. But my guess is it's like every time that we've shared a hotel room or been on the road or a trip together, I'm guessing it sounds just like it does when you're in the shower belting out Hamilton every shower you've ever taken in your life.
I think I've seen this show. Honestly, I saw it with the original performers. I've had to see it now 6-7 times. Insane.
So he was Alexander Hamilton in the Chicago show from 16 to 20. My first Broadway show ever was Hamilton in Chicago.
No way. So you've seen him live?
I've seen him live. Yeah. The first one Ashley and I ever went to was in 2018 in Chicago.
He's so good, and his energy is so next level.
I talk about just like a small town Canadian kid stumbling into a Broadway show and it being Hamilton, not knowing what to expect. It's almost one of those things like Broadway theater where you're walking in the theater and like, it's really easy to feel out of place. Like, don't know how to react. Don't know what the theater's going to look like. Didn't realize how small and intimate some of these theaters are. Was blown away by the energy, blown away by the theater of it, blown away by just the professionalism. Like, it was incredible. And now I've seen it twice.
And I mean it when I say it, that I think they have the toughest job in entertainment. Like, their schedule is relentless, and the way they have to sing and dance and act and be live and engage, it is ruthless, that schedule.
I need them wearing Apple Watches or like Fitbits and finding out how many calories they burn per show, because it's electric too. And like, even he said, like, look, I've done 1,800 to 2,000 performances. It's every much a bit apart. Like, I go to my job, I have my good days and bad days. But he was just saying, when he gets on that stage and he feels the energy and people stand up and applaud for him at the end of the day, you don't get that in your day to day a lot. So like, doing it 2,000 times, he still see the like energy and the joy of like just belting that out and performing it. It's an unbelievable show. If you haven't gone, I know it's been around forever, you have to go.
Yeah, it is so good. I also love the concept he talked about, how many times he failed. Like, you don't realize, like, these guys don't have these contracts where they're locked in for life. It's another misconception, I think, in the media industry. You just assume he's Alexander Hamilton, must be caked up for life. He's grinding. He's still grinding. And I love his story about how he knew that Broadway was for him, but monetarily it wasn't working out. Got sent back to Dallas and had his, you know, ex or whatever the fling was, give him the wake up call, like ring his bell, like, dude, what the hell are you doing? And I think if you're home thinking, what the hell am I doing? Maybe this is the wake up call you need.
I think too, for me, the episode before we get in kind of the nuts and bolts of it, it really hit home for me. My sister, who's my only sibling, who's one of my best friends, she grew up a dancer, very successful, performing the World Hip Hop Festival, went to school for dance. So being in the theater kind of reminds me of going to watch her shows. But she also had epilepsy, diagnosed at 17. Never forget her first episode when I was 13 years old, and it just happened when we were getting ready for school. No signs of it before. And I had a grand mal seizure in the shower, and it kind of changed her life, and see how she kind of approaches her life to this day, not being able to drive a car and having two kids and living downtown Vancouver and, you know, shuttling them through public transit to where she needed to go and from a young age. And I just wanted to bring light to that. You know, the cureepilepsy.org, obviously his daughter passing away at 4 years old, him having to go through the entire Chicago grind of Hamilton while, you know, his daughter's getting all these tests done and obviously not at her healthiest. I just wanted to put that out there and tell everyone that epilepsy is a crazy disease. It hits, you know, people of all ages and all shapes and sizes, and it really derails the way that, you know, we wake up and go to bed in our lives. So I just wanted to bring attention to that as it hit close to home, and really respected, you know, his, like you said, the planting the seed to have something grow into something that, you know, when he's not around, it'll still be affecting people. So just wanted to throw my two cents around that.
No, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for even sharing that. And like you said, it's like one of these things, epilepsy can hit you anywhere, and you could hit you in the shower. And there's so many people where it will hit them in the shower and family's not home, and that could be it. And it is just a terrifying disease. And guys, please, please, you can stop listening right now. And if you want to go to the show notes and make that the priority, please do that. We have her blog. We have everything about Cure in there. And David, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, and it must have hit close to home for you a little bit in terms of just the Broadway aspect. Your brother, Steven, who I think is really the internet's favorite Tardic. he works on Broadway, does he not? He's more involved on the business end than the acting end?
Yeah, he's worked on Broadway for 10 plus years now. He was working for a marketing firm and then left to get equity in a firm called RPM. And they do all Broadway digital marketing for the biggest shows. I mean, they work with, I don't want to say some of their clients, but you name a big show similar to the one we're discussing, and they work with them. And it's really cool to see his involvement and how active he is at the Tonys, and to see his firm and work he's done win a Tony. It's really cool. And Broadway is near and dear to his heart, and I'm obsessed with it. I love it.
What's your favorite show? Is Hamilton your favorite, or with, do you have a favorite
without
show?
Without a doubt. Hamilton's my favorite show, no doubt about it. I would say I think one of the most classic features that like is just one everyone should go see, A to Z, whether you're 70 or you're 12, Lion King is just a gorgeous, gorgeous production. And then what I always say for recommendation, if you have the bros, and the bros are like, ah, I'm not into Broadway, it's not my thing, take them to Book of Mormon. Like, it is the, if you can't laugh and have a good time at Book of Mormon, you're just like not a human. So that, those are my three recos.
We went and saw Frozen.
I mean, Frozen's right? Incredible. Patty Murren Frozen. Used to be the lead. She's my girl.
Yeah, that was really incredible. Can you bust out a line or two from Hamilton right now? I'm going to put you on the spot. It's 8:55 in the morning. Can you bust out a line?
You'll be back. You'll receive. Don't you remember you belong to me? You're on your own. Awesome. Wow. Don't you remember? I don't
know if that's like pretty good right there. Let's give him a round of applause. Clap it up.
My favorite is like John Adams. I know him. That can't be. That's that little man who spoke to me all those years ago. Okay, we're done.
So cut. He crushes it, this guy. So Caitlin's been on Broadway before, right? Is that like a manifesting thing? If you were to get asked, do they do like guest appearances, or do you have to lock in for a show?
She had to lock in for a show. It was like a very influencer based show. So like everyone there was like a big influencer star. And she was on for like 8 weeks or so. The show didn't really work out. It got canceled pretty quick. And I think that's a good point to talk about. So it got canceled pretty quick. But Caitlin Bristowe can say for like 2 months, she was full-time on Broadway. She got paid. It was a dream for her. For me, like I don't think I would ever, first of all, I don't have a talent, but I would love to go to like dance classes or singing lessons, like in the same world that they go to, just for like fun, just to be like, I gave jiu-jitsu a shot, like just for fun, just do it.
Well, I think you say you had no talent, but not many people can openly on a podcast that gets, you know, 50,000 downloads an episode, be able to be confident enough to bust out a Hamilton tune. And I know you, if you got the opportunity and someone said, hey, I think you apply yourself and learn the skills, and I don't think you'd be afraid to do it. I would love to see it. I'd be front row hooting, hollering like I'm at a great Bills game or something.
All right, let's manifest it. Let's get on Broadway.
What is off Broadway theater? Is that, you know, and speaking of different opportunities in Broadway, I've heard like off Broadway. What is that?
Great question. So what's cool about Hamilton is it came from the public theater. Public theater is a non-for-profit that gives just writers that really don't have much infrastructure a shot to make something happen. For a show to go from public theater to Broadway is almost impossible. It's unheard of. Hamilton and the writers and the actors that were in the original Hamilton, this was in a public theater where you could get a ticket for $2, $5, $10. Then it moved its way to off-Broadway or off-off-Broadway. Off-off-Broadway is when there's 100 seats or fewer. Okay, so that's a small production. You think about what you see in a Broadway show, it is very, very low budget. Then you go to off-Broadway, that's about 100 to 500 seats. Broadway, 500 seats plus. As I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about money and production. I also want to give a shout out to Moulin Rouge in Chicago, two other unbelievable productions. But that's the breakdown of public, off-off-Broadway, off-Broadway to Broadway. And if you look at the ROI, I wanted to ask you to ask about this because investors will invest in shows all the time. Majority of time when investors invest in shows, it's more of a passion ego project. I don't want to say ego. It's a passion project. Like these people have huge money. They want to say they have ownership in a show. Almost no one is investing in Broadway shows to get a return. Now, you invest in Hamilton, Wicked, you're getting paid for days. But only like literally 10 to 15% of these shows actually will see a return on investment. It's a highly, highly unprofitable business.
It's a passion-based business for sure. And just the history and lore of Broadway is something that kind of holds its reputation through. He talked about making $1,700 a week on Broadway kind of when he started. Mentioned the Hugh Jackmans of the world that make $100,000 a week. By the way, what's Hugh Jackman doing on Broadway making $100,000 a week? Do you know what his show is?
I don't know, but Hugh Jackman, if you're doing $100,000 a week, that was his estimation, right? You are clear, like that's $5 million. That's low for Hugh Jackman. But I think that when I talked to my brother recently, we should have him on at some point. He was saying that's now that seems to be the trend. It used to be you'd work your way through Broadway, and then what you would do is go to the big leagues. Well, now they're taking a lot of like the really big people and bringing them to like the guy who was on, I'm blanking on his name. He was the lead in Breaking Bad. He's all over. What's it? Bryan Cranston.
Yeah.
Wow. And then Hugh Jackman's show is The Music Man. So that's, you know, I mean, but just to go see Hugh Jackman is unbelievable. Oh, Dear Evan Hansen. That's another good one. Okay. Take a breather, Jason.
How much do you think he's making now doing Hamilton? I mean, given the numbers that we've got to talk numbers. He didn't really fully say for himself, but what do you think he's making?
Yeah, I think so. He started around 1700 in like a backup role. Hamilton, hugely successful show. My crack, if I'm guessing, and guys, I'm guessing here, no insight, but I'm gonna say around 10K a week.
Yeah, I think that's
like five to 10K a week, I think.
I'd like to think a little more just based off the success of the show, but he kind of alluded like you kind of signed into your contract, but it's like the OG people who are on the back end, like the 20-year workshop agreement of the people who really wrote it and kind of crafted it at the start. Those are the ones who are going to kind of see the big performance and related bonuses and things like that. So I think, you know, just overall, like hearing him talk, man, and like putting myself in like a shoes of a professional athlete, Broadway's got to be one of the hardest industries to make it, not just in the moment, but I want to talk like, okay, you can only do Broadway in the prime of your life while you're fit, while you're athletic enough to navigate through a show to maintain the lifestyle. How do you prepare for life after Broadway? Do you think that there's a union that helps them with 401ks and investment or retirement plans and savings? Because it sounds like it's an absolute fucking grind.
It does sound like a grind, dude. But I think if you're in the union, they have pensions and stuff so that you're paid on some type of residual. But I also do want to kind of like stop you there and say like it's a grind. But I'm the first person I'm thinking about is Sarah Hyland's dad. And when she was telling the story about how like they would give baths to Sarah in the sink. Like they lived in a tiny little place. They weren't making that much in the city. And he still to this day, and I think he's in his 60s, he still performs all the time on a Harry Potter. And the other thing about that I thought was cool is like what Miguel referred to, I think about the grind physically, but also the time off when he's like, yeah, I get Christmas off. That's it. Sarah Hyland's dad got, I think it was like, shit, man, I think it was like 2-3 days he could get off for the wedding. And I was like, oh, you stay in for the week or whatever. He's like, no, I got a show tomorrow at noon. And he's in his like 60s, you know? And so it's just to me, I think you could do this if you're in the right role for a very long time. But I think the union does hopefully set you up. But this isn't, you're right. This isn't the NFL. This is totally different.
It's crazy. Really, really crazy. Because even when you make it, you still are grinding.
I want to end with this real quick. I wonder if, and I'm curious what your predictions are out there, everyone. Send in 5 stars. Go follow us on Trading Secrets Facebook page and Instagram. And David Ardoin at Instagram. Jason Tardik at Instagram. Go follow us all. But I'm curious, give us a review. 5 stars. Do you think the landscape of Broadway will change? Think about how much money they are leaving on the table. The only way they make money, truly, is by people sitting in those chairs. Imagine if there was a virtual component. Imagine if there was a way to like buy into to Zoom. Imagine if they did more advertising, like there were commercial breaks, like just like every other show in sports arena and entertainment has done. I don't know how the landscape will change. Something tells me within our lifetime it might.
I like that a lot. Well, this episode kind of hit home for me with a lot of things. Just having seen him live, hearing about the epilepsy, I thought it was really great. What's hitting home for me, obviously, as we announced last week, is Ashley is pregnant. We had an ultrasound yesterday where we heard the baby's heartbeat for the first time. So shit is getting real. when I think of shit getting real, I think of a baby in my house throwing food all over the place and creating absolute chaos and carnage. And you had mentioned Branch Basics. And I just wanted to touch on that because I think I'm going to need a whole bunch of Branch Basics cleaning products in my house in a couple months here. So feed me that code again and tell me a little bit more about Branch Basics.
I love that you're already planning. Anything to save people a couple bucks, I'm here for. So this is probably the last week. You probably saw it. If you follow us on Trading Secrets Instagram, we have deals of the week every week in Branch Basics. This is the last week. But what essentially it is, it's this one concentrate model, right? So right now, prices of everything have gotten out of control. So like one bottle of the Branch Basics concentrate will get you three all-purpose bottles, three streak-free bottles. They get you three bathroom bottles, three foaming wash bottles, and then 64 loads of laundry. And for me, I'm the numbers guy. If you do the price breakdown, that literally is 27 cents for a load of laundry. So it's so much cheaper than all the other expensive competitors out there. And now you probably saw on our Instagram, if you guys are listening to this, we have that code. It's just Trading Secrets, all caps, for 15% off. So check that out. Save some money in a world like today when everything is going up and the market's going down. You got to save bucks. So David, Branch Basics, make sure you check it out. Of course, Trading Secrets. And I think that's it. Did you have anything else, the Curious Canadian?
I got one more thing.
Let's hear it.
I got to give a shout out in the reviews. Julie T. NYC left an awesome review, 5 stars. She said she loved the reflection piece from us in the divorce attorney episode. She said she's been divorced for 7 years. She loved our reflections on it. But she did say, she corrected us. She goes, if you have a $250K retainer and the amount that needs to be paid is only $100K, you do get the $150K back. So you don't have to eat the whole retainer. So that was a nice little tidbit. Just wanted to share that with people. People helping people. It's powerful stuff there.
People helping people. Make sure to give us 5 stars. Tell us your story. We will bring it up on the podcast. And let me tell you what. We were in New York City. You guys obviously know we got Hamilton, Miguel Cervantes, who one of the few guys from the Trading Secrets or girls that I have had on the show that I'm like, I'm going to be friends with that guy. I fucking love him. He is a great dude. David, me, you, him are going on the golf course. He's a big golfer. Yes. You would love him. But we have some huge guests coming down the pipeline. Huge, huge, huge. We got Caroline over from Real Housewives of New Jersey. Everyone knows Caroline Mantos. She is massive. We got Shannon Ford. We got Kelly Flanagan with some hot news. We got Steve Wilkos from Jerry. We have Bree from BFFs. Podcast with Dave Portnoy and Josh Richards. That episode is going to be absolutely electric. We have Clayton, the former Bachelor. It was a big, big week here in New York City, David, and we got some big names coming down the pipe.
It was awesome to see. I just wanted to be in the room for all of them. These are some of the guests that I've really, really wanted to get on the pod. So I know you did them in person. I know you crush them. I know they're going to be good. I can't wait to recap them.
I just want to be in the room where it happens, the room where it happens. Nice. Everybody have a great week, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of Trading Secrets, one you can't afford to miss. Bringing that money.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Military veterans and active duty service members, you could become a certified cyber warrior with just 12 weeks of training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, and IT pros with these skills often enjoy abundant opportunity and a great lifestyle. Protect our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. That's mycomputercareer.edu/CWP.